Hello. We move on now in this third podcast to look at question 5, which flows from all this problem about wire PLC. We have the prospectus prepared using the language that McNulty had suggested in paragraph 4, which we discussed in the last podcast. We're now moving on. Because these shares have ultimately been bought by Marlowe and by Bubbles, we've got questions as to whether or not Marlowe and Bubbles are able to recover damages under Hedley, Byrne and Heller, or whether they're able to recover compensation under Section 90 from the persons responsible for the prospectus. So, following on from our verbal flow chart from the first podcast, having decided that we have or haven't complied properly with the prospectus regulations so far from question 4, we now have to ask who are the persons responsible for this prospectus in question 5. This is the prospectus rules 5.5.3, which tell us that the persons who are responsible in relation to prospectuses for equity securities are the issuer, so Wire PLC itself can be sued, the directors and those authorising themselves to be named as responsible for the prospectus. So all the directors, Greggs and all the other, Herc and Carver, all of those directors, and the fourth one whose name I can't remember, will all be liable as directors. There'll be persons responsible. We then need to know if anyone else has authorised themselves to be named as being responsible. I don't think the problem tells us that. So we have to assume there is nobody else who's authorised themselves to be named as such. Then anyone else who accepts responsibility for the prospectus, and of particular importance to us as well, is any other persons who have authorised the contents of the prospectus. And this is going to be particularly important when we look at things like the profit forecasts which Stringer has made on behalf of the Barksdale Group, the specialist accountants. The real problem with Stringer is that if Stringer is named without necessarily having authorised himself to be named, then we've got a question. He's not someone who has authorised himself to be named as being responsible, but is he someone who has nevertheless authorised the contents of the prospectus? I think that would depend on whether or not he has simply provided financial information, because presumably he will say, well, the information I provided was, if you get the patent, your profits could be 40 million. If you don't get the patents, your profits will be less than 5 million. And that information, of course, wasn't made clear by McNulty in the prospectus, and therefore, I would suggest Stringer's going to have a good argument for escaping liability. And the problem here is that we just don't have cases on the detail of this stuff. So you really are left at large, good lawyer that you are, in identifying potential defendants and then looking at the detail of the regulations. And we're looking at the particular provisions that we've been talking about. Section 85, Section 102B, Section 87A, in particular subsections 1 and 2, very important, and also this paragraph 5.5.3 in the prospectus rules, which you were given in the lecture as well. So we're looking at the detail of these provisions and just thinking, who are these persons who are responsible? And then, what are their liabilities under Hedley, Byrne and Heller? What are their liabilities under Section 90 of the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000? Okay. The issue which comes out of question 5 in particular about the two potential claimants, Marlowe and Bubbles, is this. Rather than making these shares generally available and offer to the public at large, what we're told is that the strategy for the issue of shares was changed, and the investment bank leading the issue advised the placement of shares with a small number of expert investors, including Marlowe, who all relied on the terms of the prospectus. So Marlowe is going to be able to say, well, I relied on the prospectus, I should be entitled to sue under Hedley, Byrne and Heller, certainly, and arguably under Section 90. The question which has arisen there, because we've decided to make these things available only to a limited class of people, is whether or not that is an offer of securities to the public or not. If it's just going to a limited group of expert investors, then we have to look at Section 102B, which tells us that it's a communication to any person, which would seem to mean that even if it's just a small group of investors, that may nevertheless be the public. But we also have to look at the exclusions from liability under Section 86 and Schedule 11A of the Act and see whether or not we think an issue to a limited group of people in that way is something which falls outside the obligations to comply with prospectus rules. So that's what you're going to have to look at, those regs, and try and decide what you think they mean, whether or not this limited issue, subscription issue, would fall within that or not. And so in the materials, this is all kind of pages 29, 30, and 31. So you have a look through those categories and see if you think Marlowe will fall within any of those. You can do that for yourself. In relation to bubbles, I mean, Marlowe is going to be able to rely on the fact there's a contract there. He's going to rely on the fact Hedley, Bird and Heller, and he's going to try and sue at common, or I would suggest in any event. In relation to bubbles, we have the issue which comes up in those cases after Caparo and Dickman, and is an issue in Caparo and Dickman itself. What if this prospectus is being prepared for a limited group of people? Can someone outside that group, like Bubbles, rely on bringing an action or not? And so Caparo and Dickman is clearly, for the common law, wants to limit the people who can possibly be claimants, basically stop a floodgates argument. The cases that relate specifically to share issues, whereas Caparo and Dickman is about a takeover, I would suggest, slightly more generally, is that on the one hand we've got Al-Naqib, which says that if you prepare a prospectus for a limited group of investors, only people within that limited group may sue, because otherwise, a la Caparo and Dickman, we could have people far beyond the understanding of the people preparing the prospectus being liable. Whereas cases like Posfund suggest that even purchasers in the aftermarket should be entitled to sue on the basis of the Hedley, Bird and Heller principle. Now, what I have suggested beyond all of that is that we now have prospectus regulations which impose requirements for the preparation of prospectuses on the persons responsible. And therefore, further to Section 85, I'm saying we can't just rely on the common law and Al-Naqib and Caparo and Dickman saying, oh, well, if you didn't have these people within your contemplation, you owe them no duties. Because I would suggest that now, regardless of all of that, when you're making an offer to the public, you are required to produce the prospectus no matter what. And therefore, I would suggest the regulations assume that everyone is within your potential contemplation. And therefore, I would suggest Posfund is now the rule to be followed, and that Al-Naqib really has to go back in the dustbin, unless you've managed to construct your issue in such a way that it falls outside the prospectus regulations. So that's a key issue there in relation to Bubbles, whether or not Bubbles is someone who, under the tort of negligent misstatement, is entitled to rely on that misstatement or not. You've then also got Section 90 of the Financial Services and Markets Act, where there is a right to sue for compensation in relation to misleading statements in relation to omissions. And we've discussed a lot of that in the previous podcast in relation to question four, how McNulty has drafted the prospectus here, the fact that he seems to have omitted a lot of information which must be important, and therefore I would suggest has opened himself up to liability, has opened up all the persons responsible to liability. I think that McNulty is going to be important because he must be the person who's authorised the contents of the prospectus if he has drafted it. So Section 90 is interesting. It starts off any person responsible for listing particulars. Now we know that further to Section 87A that also involves prospectuses. But notice any person responsible. So you've got to show they fall within the category of responsibility. Is liable to pay compensation to a person who has acquired securities and suffered loss in respect of them. So we've got to show that Marlowe and Bubbles have both acquired securities and that they've suffered loss. As a result of any untrue or misleading statement. So the misstatement must either be untrue or it must be misleading. And I would suggest this is where the idea of omissions would come in there, if it didn't in any event come in under Little Roman II, or the omission from the prospectus of any matter required to be included. So this is why it's important to go back to what we said about question four and McNulty's drafting if he said something that's misleading. Remember, we said that things were probably literally true as McNulty drafted them, but did it give a false impression? And also, anything that's omitted will give rise to liability for compensation. We have no cases on how Section 90 is going to function. It's a very new provision required by the Prospectus Directive itself. To what extent we don't know, will there be a need to show causation? To what extent will there be a need to show the sort of proximity that bothered the courts in Caparo and Dickman and Al-Naqib? So these are things you're going to have to kick around in answering this question. There's clearly then a whole zone of things you can discuss beyond simply answering the problem about how Section 90 differs from or may differ from Higley, Byrne and Heller and so on and so forth. I think one of the key things there is Posse Fond, very important case, ignored by tort lawyers. It doesn't really make an appearance at all, other than the occasional mention in a footnote in an occasional tort law book. Otherwise, everyone mentions Al-Naqib, and obviously they mention Caparo and Dickman. But Posse Fond is very overlooked, but very important in relation to securities law. And there's a lot of fun things there to say about common law systems. I know some cases get overlooked, and other cases don't. Anyway, and if you're wondering about McNulty saying, "What did I do?" That's basically his catchphrase from the programme The Wire. That'll do for this one. You can kick around, I'm sure, Hedley, Byrne and Heller itself, the need for the special relationship, expertise, reliance on the expertise. You can do all that for yourselves. Most of you will have done Hedley, Byrne and Heller before, but it's all set out in the materials. You just break it down and demonstrate whether or not you think each element is there on the facts. So securities law, all I'm trying to do with these podcasts is to encourage you as to which of the provisions you need to discuss, and you simply look at their terms and think, well, do they apply on these facts or not? You can do that. You can do that. Next podcast thinks about insider dealing.